This episode is based on a chapter from Laws of Life, Book 1, Ditch the System, Design Your Life by Jack Spirko. And I want to start by asking you to just imagine something for a second. Imagine you are walking across this like sprawling, totally empty parking lot.
Okay, I'm picturing it.
Right. And you look down, you spot a crumpled lottery ticket just blowing across the pavement, and you pick it up. Now, imagine deciding that finding this random piece of paper is your entire retirement strategy.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Right? Like you're going to pay off your mortgage, fund your kids' college, travel the world, all relying on the statistical miracle that this specific piece of trash is a winner. It sounds completely insane.
It's completely delusional, honestly.
Exactly. But today we're doing a deep dive into why millions of people run their careers, their relationships, and, well, their entire lives on those exact same odds.
Yeah, and it is it's a terrifying realization when you finally see that pattern in human behavior. It really is.
It is. So our mission today is unpacking chapter 6 of Jack's book.
Mm-hmm.
And this chapter centers on a really brutal, but I think ultimately liberating truth, which is what you do matters. Nothing affects your life more than what you do, or crucially, what you choose not to do.
That choice of inaction is huge.
Yeah, it's everything. And I see this dynamic play out constantly in my line of work. As a personal accountability coach, I spend my days working with adults who are, they're trying to rebuild their direction. You know, they've been hit by sudden job disruptions, or they're buried under this crippling debt, or they just feel like their goals stalled out like a decade ago.
Right. They're just stuck.
Exactly. So many of them are literally sitting on the roof of their flooded house, just waiting for a rescue boat that just isn't coming.
Yeah. And I mean, I observe that exact same paralysis, just on a more macro level. In my background as a small business operations consultant, I'm usually brought in when a company is just bleeding cash.
Oh, I bet you see some disasters.
Oh, absolutely. I have witnessed firsthand the sheer destruction caused by leaders who, instead of taking decisive action, they just passively wait for the market to bounce back.
Right.
The scale of the problem is different from your individual coaching, sure, but the root disease is identical.
Right, the root disease of drifting. Which brings us to a question we really need to ask you, the listener, right up front. Are you actively steering your life right now? Or are you just floating along, assuming the current will magically carry you to a safe harbor?
And if you're floating, Spirko argues, we first have to confront a massive piece of cultural programming that actually encourages us to be victims.
Yeah, the victim mindset.
Right, because personal responsibility used to be viewed as a foundational virtue, you know?
Mm.
But the modern narrative has subtly shifted. The current message is often like, if a problem isn't your fault, it's not your job to fix it. Someone else should handle it.
Which is such a dangerous trap to fall into.
It is. And he points to a very specific marketing campaign in the book to illustrate this shift. Back in 2012, the government ran these multi-billion dollar taxpayer-funded radio ads targeting highly self-reliant rural areas.
Wait, like where specifically?
In places like Arkansas farm country and the Appalachian
yeah.
Mountains, historically very self-sufficient areas. And the core message of these ads was essentially, even if you are getting by, even if your bills are paid, you might still qualify for food stamps. So you should apply.
Okay, and let's be incredibly clear here, because we aren't taking any sort of political stance on welfare programs. We are simply analyzing the underlying psychological messaging that the text identifies here.
Yes, exactly. We're looking at the psychology.
Right, because the subtext of that marketing is get what you can get. If things are tough, it's not your fault, so let an external entity fix it. But Spirko points out the inherent danger in that mindset is that it actively denies reality. Because even if a situation is completely outside your control, even if it is 0% your fault, navigating the aftermath is still 100% your responsibility.
Which is a tough pill to swallow.
It really is. And I actually have to pause and push back on this a little bit on behalf of the people I coach, because this is the exact moment where my clients usually get highly defensive. They confuse taking responsibility with admitting guilt.
Oh, interesting. They blur the two together.
Constantly. When someone gets blindsided by, say, a massive corporate layoff or a sudden medical crisis, and you tell them, look, this is your responsibility, they immediately hear, I deserved this. It was my fault this happened. So from your consulting perspective, how do we uncouple those two concepts so people can actually move forward?
That is such a vital distinction. And honestly, it makes complete sense why someone who just lost their livelihood would feel attacked by the word responsibility. But if we break down the mechanics of it, fault is entirely backward-looking.
Okay, backward-looking.
Right. Fault asks, who caused this mess? But responsibility is entirely forward-looking. Mm-hmm. It asks, who is going to clean this up so we can actually survive? Accepting the burden of solving a problem doesn't mean you are absolving whoever caused it.
You're not letting them off the hook.
Exactly. It just means you are refusing to drown while you wait for an apology. And Spyrko actually lived through the ultimate test of this exact distinction. He tells this staggering story of moving his family 1,400 miles from Texas all the way to rural Pennsylvania for a new opportunity.
A huge move.
Massive. And on the exact day they moved into their new home, a competitor bought his new company.
Wait, literally on moving day?
Yes. Boxes still packed. And the competitor instantly fired nearly 400 of the 600 employees.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Now, he managed to survive that initial bloodbath. He worked as a regional VP of sales for 3 years. But eventually, right before Christmas, he was let go in a downsizing round that heavily favored the old guard of that acquiring company.
Wow. Right before Christmas.
Yeah. Brutally unfair. Was any of that his fault? No. But he didn't have the luxury of sitting around agonizing over the fairness of corporate mergers.
Right, because he had a stranded family, he had a brand new mortgage in a state they had just moved to, and a son who was doing really well in school. So uprooting his kid right in the middle of the school year just to flee the situation, that wasn't an option he was willing to accept.
So he accepted the reality of the situation immediately. To survive and keep his family afloat, he took independent contract work for 6 solid months. Then, over the summer, specifically so he wouldn't disrupt his son's schooling, they moved all the way back to Texas.
Just doing what had to be done.
Exactly. And when a promising new job lead down there fell through at the very last minute, he called his old boss and took his old job back. A job he actively hated. But he did it for an entire year.
Man, swallowing your pride like that is so hard.
It is. But why did he do it? Because he owned the outcome. It was his responsibility to his family. And in my consulting work, this is the exact dividing line I see during a crisis.
Really? How so?
Well, the leaders who freeze, who spend all their energy compiling a list of reasons why the market is unfair, they lose the business every time. The leaders who immediately accept the new painful reality and do whatever is required, no matter how much it stings their pride, those are the ones who survive.
But surviving a crisis is one thing, right? Like when the house is on fire, survival instinct just kicks in naturally. Where this concept gets really interesting to me is applying it when your life isn't a total disaster, but it's just unfulfilling.
Yeah, the quiet desperation.
Right. Because after taking that hated job just to stabilize his family, Spyrko found himself traveling 20 days a month for regional sales. He was surviving, but he was completely miserable. He had been teaching himself internet marketing on the side, but he hit a wall.
He realized he couldn't just keep doing it as a hobby.
Exactly. He realized that to truly master search engine optimization, he couldn't keep tinkering in his spare time. He needed to be totally immersed. He needed to be surrounded by pros.
Which requires a massive leap of faith. I mean, you don't master SEO by hanging around telecom engineers in regional sales. You have to actively change your environment.
So he did something that most people would consider completely reckless. He took a voluntary $95,000 a year pay cut.
Unbelievable.
I know. He went from a highly lucrative regional sales position down to a $45,000 a year job at an agency in Dallas purely to learn. He traded financial comfort for future potential.
That is a huge short-term cost.
Incredibly high. But the payoff. Today, he runs a massive podcast from a home studio. He sees his grandkids every single day, and he generates an income in the top 2% of the country making more than your average general practice doctor. It really challenges you to look at the invisible cost of staying comfortable. For anyone listening right now, you have to ask yourself, what safe job or situation are you holding on to that is actually suffocating your long-term potential?
That invisible cost is so insidious. And Spyrko breaks down exactly why people end up trapped in those safe, quietly miserable lives. It's rarely a conscious choice to be unfulfilled. Instead, people just stop steering.
Right, they just let go.
Yeah, and he uses this fantastic analogy of a cargo ship to explain the psychology here. Think about a massive ship leaving a port in China, bound for San Francisco. 99% of the time, that ship arrives exactly on schedule. Why? Because the captain plotted a specific course, directed the crew, and relentlessly executed the plan.
It isn't magic. It isn't luck. It's just applied geometry, math, and execution.
Precisely. Hmm. But imagine if the crew of that exact same ship just pointed the bow east, fired up the engines, and walked away from the helm, assuming they don't hit a catastrophic storm The ship will eventually end up somewhere.
Sure, it'll hit land eventually.
Right. But the odds of hitting San Francisco exactly on time by pure chance. That brings us back to your opening thought. It's like finding a lottery ticket in a parking lot and expecting it to fund your life.
Yeah, the math just doesn't work out.
And yet, this is exactly how the vast majority of people navigate their existence. They get their ship out of the harbor, meaning, you know, they graduate school, they get a decent job, maybe they get married, and then they just cut the engines and let go of the wheel. They stop proactively designing their course and transition entirely into just reacting to whatever floats into their path.
And I think we really have to give ourselves a little grace here, because letting go of the wheel feels completely harmless in the moment.
It does, because nothing crashes immediately.
Right. The ship is still moving. The scenery outside the window is still changing, so it feels like progress. But Spurko makes a crucial point. Inaction has a compounding effect, just as much as action does. And this is so deeply human. You don't wake up one morning drastically out of shape.
No, of course not.
You just skip a single workout because you're tired. You eat poorly for one weekend. You tell yourself, oh, I'll get back on track next week. And because the consequences aren't immediate, next week quietly turns into next year. And that exact same principle applies to your finances, your relationships, and your career skills.
That's spot on. A ship doesn't end up hundreds of miles off course because the captain made one massive dramatic error. It goes off course because tiny vital corrections, like checking the bearings or adjusting for wind resistance, were neglected day after day.
Just a degree or two off.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Those microscopic errors stack up.
Hmm.
By the time you look around and realize you are lost, the cost of getting back on your original course is terribly expensive. Choosing not to act is still an act of choice. Ignoring the small things writes your future just as permanently as your massive life-altering decisions.
I imagine you see the devastating results of this compounding inaction constantly when you consult for businesses, just the slow drift into failure.
Oh, it is the silent killer of companies. Spirko actually talks about why he stopped doing small business consulting, and it mirrors my experience perfectly. He would sit down with entrepreneurs whose businesses were bleeding out, and their default response was always, well, we're just waiting for things to pick up.
Waiting for the economy.
Yes. They were banking their entire survival on the hope of a better economy. What they completely ignored was that even if the economy miraculously improved, their proactive competitors, the ones who were actually using the slow period to improve their operations and marketing, would just steal all the new business anyway.
They truly believed a rising tide would automatically lift their sinking boat.
Exactly. And Spurko uses an incredibly visceral analogy for this mindset. Waiting for the economy to fix your business is like looking out your back window, seeing a huge pile of trash in your yard and thinking, well, I didn't put that trash there, so someone else should come pick it up.
Which is madness.
Let's be rooted in reality here. No one is going to climb your fence and clean your yard for you. Waiting is not a strategy. It is an abdication of duty.
So if waiting isn't a strategy, how do we actively rewire ourselves to solve our own problems? Because when people are unhappy, Spurko points out that they usually default to three fairly destructive behaviors. They try to buy happiness with plastic crap and new toys, they self-medicate to numb the frustration, or they just passively accept the misery as their permanent reality.
Yeah, just settling.
Right. To break that cycle, he says we need to perform self-analysis and issue a very specific command to what he calls our mental computer. And the exact prompt you need to use is this. Computer, I want to remove X from my life and get Y into it. How can I make that happen?
I love this because it leverages how the brain actually works naturally. It forces your reticular activating system to start scanning for solutions instead of just fixating on problems.
Exactly.
He walks through a highly practical example in the text, too. Let's say you want to remove debt from your life and you want to add travel. When you feed that prompt into your mental computer, the brain starts connecting the data points. Travel requires disposable income. Debt eats your disposable income.
So it connects the two.
Right. So the solution begins to generate itself. You realize you need to create a strict budget. You need to use a snowball method to attack the debt. And, crucially, maybe you decide to drive for Uber or Lyft on the weekends to generate an extra $500 a month.
Just to speed it up.
Yeah. You use that new revenue stream to accelerate the debt payoff and eventually to fund those vacations.
And that specific mental output isn't just a hypothetical thought experiment. Spurko shares the story of an Uber driver he actually met in 2016 while he was in Asheville, North Carolina. This young woman engineered her absolute freedom using this exact methodology.
It's an amazing story.
It is. She paid off her student loans, completely quit her traditional job, and started driving full-time while traveling the country.
And the way she structured her life was brilliant. She would rent inexpensive rooms on Airbnb, moving to a new city for 2 or 3 months at a time. Because she controlled her schedule, she only drove during peak surge hours to maximize her income with the least amount of driving.
So smart.
Very. That left her with an abundance of free time to build relationships, explore, and learn the local area. When she felt she had experienced everything a city had to offer, or she simply got bored, she'd pack up and move to the next city.
She was totally in control.
She wasn't just wandering aimlessly, hoping to find herself. She was acting as the captain of her ship. She was laying a deliberate foundation, testing out where she eventually wanted to settle down rather than just going broke backpacking blindly across Europe.
She essentially leveraged modern tools that literally did not exist a generation ago to design a life on her terms. And that is a massive point in this chapter. The tools required to design your life have never been more accessible or cheaper than they are today.
It's a completely different world now.
It is. Spyrko contrasts his current career with the past. If he wanted to be a broadcaster back in 1993, the barriers to entry were astronomical. He would have needed a specialized broadcasting degree. He would have had to endure years of unpaid internships fetching coffee, begging a program director for a 2 a.m. radio slot, all while operating under strict FCC oversight.
Oh, the gatekeeping was intense. But contrast that with what he actually did in 2008. He launched a modern survivalism podcast, and he recorded the early episodes entirely in his car during his commute.
That's wild. In his car.
Yeah, his startup costs were virtually non-existent. A $30 MP3 recorder, a $20 headset, maybe $300 for web hosting, and $500 for a logo and website design. Now, it wasn't easy. He endured 18 months of brutal 3 and 4 a.m. wake-ups to edit the show before his day job.
The sweat equity part.
Exactly. But the result of that sweat equity, a six-figure business, total creative control, and absolute freedom from corporate structures.
Which perfectly illustrates the power of disruptive technology. It removes the permission structure of society. Whether we're talking about podcasting back then or the explosion of artificial intelligence today, disruptive tech absolutely terrifies the entrenched old guard.
Oh, they hate it.
Right. People who rely on established guilds, expensive certifications, and gatekeepers, they want to protect their territory. But for the hungry, for the people willing to put in the work, disruption provides a massive opportunity to leapfrog the herd. So, to you listening, stop complaining about the gatekeepers. If your dream is to make video games, stop stressing about getting hired by a massive studio and go utilize the thousands of hours of free coding tutorials online. The barriers to entry are practically gone. You just have to choose to walk through the door.
But walking through that door requires sustained effort. To actually execute on these modern opportunities, you need a structural framework. Otherwise, human nature will pull you right back into the drift of apathy. So Spyrko provides a highly practical structure for this called the SHEP method. It's an acronym designed to keep you on course.
Let's break that acronym down step by step. So S stands for set the course. You must know your destination. Clarity is simply not optional here. A captain doesn't just point the bow into the fog and hope for the best. You have to pick an objective because literally any defined objective is better than drifting aimlessly.
Right. Next, H is for hold the wheel. You have to stay engaged with the process. Treat your life like you were driving a car on a congested highway. You would never just take your hands off the steering wheel or hand control over to the potholes in the road. You have to maintain absolute control over your decisions, regardless of external conditions.
Okay, then I stands for inspect and adjust. No voyage goes perfectly according to the initial plan. You have to constantly evaluate where you are relative to where you want to be. Making small, incremental corrections early prevents massive catastrophic problems later on. And crucially, you have to reprogram how you view obstacles. Stop seeing them as unfair punishments and start treating them as valuable feedback to adjust your course.
And finally, P stands for push forward. Forward motion is non-negotiable. Just sitting in the harbor thinking about sailing doesn't get you to port. Action compounds. You must have consistent forward motion even on the days you're exhausted, frustrated, or doubting yourself.
It perfectly aligns with the quote Spyrko pulls from the movie The Shawshank Redemption: "Get busy living or get busy dying." It really is that stark of a choice when it comes to designing your life.
It is. Let's actually lock in the core truths of this law to ensure this doesn't just become another motivational concept that fades away by tomorrow morning. If we distill this entire chapter down, here are the vital points to remember as a student of these principles. First, what you do matters more than anything else in your life.
Absolutely.
Second, neglect is never a neutral state. It is a slow, quiet path to outcomes you did not choose. Third, responsibility depends entirely on ownership, not on who is at fault. Fourth, having a clear direction combined with a consistent action will beat raw talent and good intentions every single time. And lastly, no one is coming to fix your life for you. You are the captain.
To ensure you don't just nod your head right now and go back to drifting with the current, Spirko provides the exact mental code to rewrite your internal operating system. I'm going to give you the three mental code rewrite lines exactly as they are written in the chapter.
Listen closely to these.
Number one, computer core. I want to remove X from my life and get Y into it. How can I make that happen? Number two, computer pause often, check my course, and correct small errors before they become big ones. Number three, computer pause. When I find a problem or an obstacle, treat it like a gift and capitalize on it. And hey, if you want to dive deeper into these concepts and find more resources on how to apply them to your specific situation, you can find everything over at jackslaws.com.
As we wrap up, there's one final, incredibly profound story Spirko shares that really anchors the gravity of this entire concept. He talks about how, years after he started his podcast, a military veteran approached him.
Oh, this story is intense.
It is. This man had returned from serving in Iraq, was in an incredibly dark place, and literally had a gun in his mouth, contemplating suicide. But Spirko's core phrase, "What you do matters," kept playing on a loop in his head. It disrupted his spiral just enough to make him put the gun down.
Wow.
He decided to stay. He planted a garden, reconnected with his children, and fundamentally built a new life. Those four simple words literally saved his life.
It is absolutely staggering to think about, and it leaves us with a final thought for you to carry with you as you go about your day. If those four simple words, "What you do matters," are powerful enough to literally pull a man back from the absolute brink and save his life, what dormant, neglected part of your life could be resurrected right now? If you finally stop waiting for someone else to pick up the trash in your yard, think about it. And don't forget to check out jackslaws.com for more resources. Keep your hands on the wheel.